Edition 2025 Metal March Metal Merch and listen to every installment of the Metal Marathon at kbu.fm/metal and support metal on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kbu.fm.
Hey KBOO listeners, come join us Friday, April 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. here at the station for KBOO's April Fools for Fools First Friday Arts Walk for the eccentrics, the clowns, and the freaks. Enjoy an evening of art, live music, vendors, performers, food, drinks, and more. That's Friday, April 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. at 20 Southeast 8th Ave, Portland, Oregon. Can't wait to see you there.
From Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, actually in Berkeley today, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, major protests break out in Haiti. Also, Salvadorans living in fear as Trump threatens tens of thousands with immediate deportation. Gary Bakker's backyard report from L.A. What's going on down south? What's happening? How is California fighting back? All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is Friday afternoon. I'm here with Miguel Gavila Molina. This is your daily investigative news magazine. Miguel, are you tired of a foreigner, a white fascist from South Africa? Are you tired of the fact that the U.S. government, Democrats and Republicans, rolled over and gave this racist from South Africa, everybody in the Trump administration, they don't like immigrants. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Dennis, it's disgusting, first of all, but it's also, I think, a time for people to rise. And those 10, along with Chuck Schumer, should be recalled from their positions. And it's time that people start pressuring their local representatives. You know, I saw this incredible speech by Connecticut Congressman Larson. Unbelievable speech and scolding he gave and demanded for Elon Musk to be present, you know, in front of the committee that does that. Well, next to him was Mike Thompson, you know, up north areas, congressional representative. literally embarrassed, trying to hide. These Democrats, they need to stand up, fist pump, you know, Larson, and say, we need to do this, and not just sit there idiotic, you know, twirling their thumbs.
Crawling
and
around. Well, listen, I've got a theory here.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to make this very clear. I want people to hear me. I'm talking about Chuck Schumer, the senator. Now, about 24 hours before he flip-flopped and gave Trump everything he needed to destroy this country. I don't know if you heard it. Trump called him a Palestinian.
Right, right.
Chuck Schumer, there is no stronger supporter. He's Mr. 2,000-pound bomb. Ship him over as soon as possible.
Right.
Chuck Schumer. So he gets called the Palestinian by Trump. 24 hours after that, he flips. He's gone.
Right.
I think he was terrified.
Well, not just terrified.
That Trump is going to repeat that he's not a Jew. And we all know, given the support for the weaponry, that he is a all-out Zionist who has supported the slaughter from the get-go.
Yes.
And now he sold this country out.
Well, it's time to recall these politicians and the do-nothing Democrats that haven't said a word. They might discuss and debate amongst themselves. They need to be heard. They need to come out. And I'm calling out Mike Thompson for doing nothing except sitting there like an idiot. They need to stand up or be recalled one by one.
I have a request. People who are feeling angry, thoughtful about the situation, have ideas, we'd love to hear them here. We'd love to speak to you here at KPFA and Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We got a lot of work ahead of us. So you can write to us, dennis@kpfa.org, dennis@kpfa.org. Check us out. Tell us what you're thinking. What's on your mind? Are you angry? Are you delighted with this new government? Do you think Chuck Schumer did the right thing? I'd like to know what you think, what your desires are, and who you'd like to hear over these airwaves. Please let us know. dennis@kpfa.org. You are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Dennis Bernstein here with Miguel Gavilan Molina. And we're going to kick off the show with an old friend of ours, Juan Jose Gutierrez. He's a Latino immigrant rights activist. He's a real fighter for the people, and he's an anti-racist from the get-go. It's been a while, Jose, Juan Jose Gutierrez, but it's good to have you with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis, and thank you, Miguel Gavilan Molina, for inviting me. I mean, we have our work cut out for us. I was just listening to this outstanding introduction to this program by both of you, and I couldn't agree more. I can tell you that out here where I am in Southern California, in the city of L.A., and of course, you know, we have to speak about the entire county of Los Angeles, there's been a lot going on, and not just here, but all around Southern California, the five-county area, which is populated by, you know, quite a few millions of people, or something like close to 15 million people out here, maybe more, in San Bernardino, Riverside counties, Orange County, Ventura, and L.A. And I've been going to all of these counties, and I can tell you that people are beginning to wake up, or they have been awakened by this slew of anti-immigrant, anti-worker, racist, fascist policies that have been articulated and have been coming our way from day one out of the White House. You know, suffice it to say that in the close to 60 days that President Trump has been back in the White House, of the over 200 executive orders that he's already issued, about 75% of them are against immigrants. And you were just mentioning, Dennis, at the introduction of the program, that the U.S. is going to revoke the legal status of more than 500,000 immigrants from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. But that's just today, right? Over the last couple of days, we learned that the so-called balance of power, checks and balances that are supposed to be in the three branches of the federal government, you know, the executive, the judicial, and the legislative branches. President Donald Trump is not respecting any of that, at least insofar as the judicial branch is concerned. A federal judge from D.C. Ordered the Trump administration to turn some planes around that were transporting close to or over 200 undocumented immigrants to these horrible prisons that President Bukele has set up over there, supposedly to control gang violence.
Talk a little bit more about that. What did you really see, Juan Jose, when you saw those prisoners in that captive outfit, in that slave traveling outfit, where they couldn't even straighten their heads up? It wasn't like they were afraid to look up. They were locked down. They were slaves in the 21st century. Your thoughts on that?
No question about it, Dennis. I mean, you know, this is fascism, pure and simple. Now, if you want to analyze what happened with these flights and these detainees that were delivered to the prison system in El Salvador, I guess the first thing you have to say is that it was a clear violation of international law. None of the persons that were deported who were not El Salvadoran could have been sent over there or should have been sent over there, because they're not nationals from that country, number one. And number two, they didn't violate any laws in that country. They had not been convicted of any wrongdoing in El Salvador. And nonetheless, just because Donald Trump is the president of the United States and he thinks he can do anything he wants, he sent some over there in violation of a federal court order not to do that. And then what we saw, the spectacle, the inhuman spectacle, was just unbelievable. I mean, it's a known fact that undocumented workers in the United States have come to constitute, in the modern era, you know, modern-day slaves. But to see some of those modern-day slaves to be treated in that inhuman and really horrible way by the authorities in prison authorities in El Salvador. I mean, he left me shivering.
It is frightening, Juan Jose. But one of the things that concerns me is, are people getting prepared? Or is there any way to protect, particularly in Southern California, it has one of the largest concentrations of Latinos in the United States next to New York. But here in California, it is a sanctuary state. You know, L.A., a few months back, I believe, maybe 6 months or a year, declared the city council as a sanctuary, you know, city. Being that said, are the community themselves preparing to protect and defend themselves? Because there is that threat, at least from what I hear, you know, is he going to next move the military? Because he's declared war, you know, that there's a war. United States is engaged in a war. Well, wait a second. To be engaged in war, you need congressional approval. You need all kinds of, you know, protocols, processes. But This dictator isn't following any rules. And the threat, you know, if he doesn't get what he wants from California, you know, will he mobilize, you know, the U.S. armed forces? Now, we've seen him already mobilize, you know, soldiers on the border, you know, on the U.S.-Mexican border. And they've been adding thousands and building, you know, these, you know, like headquarters as if they're ready to invade Mexico. Is there any talk of that? Have you heard anything, and what are people doing?
Well, as to your first question, are people getting ready, to rise up and start defending our rights, not just in Southern California, but across the U.S.? Well, as someone who lives and works, has been doing this for decades in Southern California, I can tell you that people are resisting. They are organizing, but let's be clear about something. right now, the undocumented immigrant community and immigrants in general have not been doing everything that I know that deep in their heart and in their gut they would like to do. They would like to come out, pour out onto the streets as we've done, you know, for many years, especially in 2006, in 1994, and beyond, you know, when millions of people came out on the streets, you know, to demand comprehensive immigration reform, meaning, you know, legislation that would give them legal protections, legal residency, and eventual U.S. citizenship, right? The sad reality is that the current administration has come at us, you know, in a relentless kind of way. I mean, executive order after executive order. And the fact is that people in the immigrant community thus far are very frightened, especially when they're being told by the authorities at the highest level, from the president on down, you know, the courthouses, hospitals, schools, you know, from grammar school all the way to universities, you know, churches, you know, work sites, you know, meaning fields of agriculture, building sites. I mean, you name it, right? Roads, I mean, private homes, theaters, I mean, you know, sports arenas. I mean, nothing is safe anymore, right? Beaches, I mean, public parks. I mean, you go anywhere and you're being told that immigration authorities, ICE agents, can arrest you. I mean, you know, without due process or anything like this, right?
Yeah, you go on a picnic with your family and you end up in lockdown in El Salvador. That's what this country is turning into. Sorry.
So that's what I'm saying. We know that the Constitution is still there and that we do have due process rights, and that this president and his administration are violating, you know, the most basic and fundamental constitutional rights that all Americans and non-Americans have by virtue of residing and working in this country. So we have to do battle with that. And so, you know, immigrants have not been the ones to come out this time. In L.A., starting February the 2nd, and for the next 20 days, hundreds of thousands of young men and women, students, you know, took to the streets. They called student strikes. They didn't go to school. They were demonstrating day after day after day. That was impressive. Not a whole lot of political clarity in what they were doing, but they were certainly frustrated and angry, and they wanted to step up and represent their parents who were frightened and still are, you know, at home, not going to work, not going to the, you know, to the supermarket, you know, to get the provisions for the week, and so on and so forth. It's a very ugly situation. These young men and women came out, right? We have been organizing Know Your Rights workshops across the Southland. Thousands of people have shown up. They want to know what can they do in this fascist climate that, you know, that has been deployed by the people in charge of the White House, especially Stephen Miller, you know, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, who used to be, you know, the immigration architect of all the measures that were, you know, that were deployed against immigrants in the first Donald Trump administration. You know, we did our own march on March 9th. People came out, not in the numbers that we thought they were going to come out. You know, that finally registered in our collective mind that people are really afraid and frightened. We're gearing up for May 1. We think people are going to start losing that fear, because that's no way for human beings, you know, to live and to function in a healthy society. So we expect larger contingents of people to come out. We hope we're not right, we're not wrong, but we have a lot of work to do. As you said in the introduction, you know, we have our work cut out for us. You know, we're going to have to declare ourselves in a permanent state of civil resistance and organization if we're going to turn things around. I've never seen anything like this in the United States of America, the one I've known, you know, throughout my life that I've been in this country.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it there for now. But Juan Jose Gutierrez, we always appreciate your time and your analysis and your perspective on this. And we want to keep this dialogue going as we watch this unfold and as we see people rise up. If you're right, we're going to see a hell of a lot of people finally having had enough of the Republicans and the Democrats and do-nothing politicians that are watching this country turn not so slow motion fascist state. Thank you for spending the time.
Thank you, Dennis, and thank you, Miguel, and we'll stay in touch.
Igualmente. Cuídese mucho.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, a very short break, and we're going to stay in L.A. We're going to begin the backyard report with Gary Baca. We're going to find out what's happening in his backyard. That's L.A. Stay with us.
Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah.
We definitely need to bring some loving here today. We're starting this week. We talked a little bit about it in a former interview, but this is the formal beginning of the Baca Report with Gary Baca. He's going to take us to his backyard, which is L.A., Los Angeles. We care a lot about what's going on down south. We have to unite, of course, as a state because there's a big job ahead of us. Gary, what's going on in your mind? How is L.A. taking to the Donald and his billionaire partner?
Well, you know, there's a lot going on, Dennis. This is something that's happening. Protests are all over Califas. Right here in Southern California, the streets are filled with marches and rallies. So this Saturday is the March for Humanity in Santa Monica. So we're inviting all the folks from the Bay Area, leave tonight, be here tomorrow at 10 a.m. The theme of the march, Dennis, is for the negative and anti-immigrant stance coming from the White House. It's Santa Monica and Los Angeles in solidarity with undocumented workers and families. So this is happening tomorrow, Saturday, March 22nd, 9 a.m. till 2, and congregating at 16th and Pearl next to the John Adams Middle School. So at 10 a.m., we march from Pico Boulevard to the Santa Monica Pier, and there we meet with resources, a resource fair and rally. So there's a lot of fear, Dennis, going on in the community, a lot of anxiety, but there's also a lot of hope. So we talked to a mom who has a kid, and has actually a few kids in the L.A. school district, and she said in order to start the process of being legal, she has to go back to Mexico for 10 years. Well, that's not going to work for her. She has kids here, so what's going to happen to their kids? You know, how will they survive? So she's frustrated by the pathway to citizenship. She's a hardworking woman. Her family's a hardworking family, no criminal background, and she has kids here in the U.S., born here, going to school. So also, which happened yesterday, in a Luna Niguel couple has lost their fight to stay in the United States after 35 years of being here. They were deported back to Colombia. Nelson and Gladys Gonzalez were detained last month during a check-in. These were parents, grandparents with a house, a job, grown kids, a good family with no trouble. They were handcuffed by the wrists and ankles, then taken to several detention centers with no criminal record. ICE determined they were in violation and deported them. So once again, separating families. But there's an organization here, Dennis, that is called Union del Barrio, and is an organization to defend the families. They have flyers, they got bullhorns. There's about 150 of these folks searching Los Angeles for ICE agents. And once they get to the locations, they tell some of the folks that are there their rights and how they need to kick out ICE. So families are not criminals. So the L.A. SoCal community conducts their own anti-ICE patrols. So they're on the streets. They're looking for ICE. They know what's happening in the Bay Area and San Jose. They've seen what happened there. So it's happening all over here, but you have a whistleblower, a signal that says, hey, they're in this area, stay out. And, you know, we have our share of protesters over there at the Tesla plant and some of the facilities here in the dealerships. Tesla owners are dealing with the backlash of Elon Musk. So L.A. residents are getting notes on their Tesla saying, would you please consider getting rid of your Tesla vehicle? That's the message they're leaving with folks on their car. The message, and it's saying, the message you are sending at this point is, I am a Nazi too. So we're taking it real serious here in Southern California and what's going on. There was a Tesla location that was vandalized, a few cars set on fire. So there's also a new website popping up with personal information on the Tesla owners. So in Los Angeles, San Bernardino County, Orange County, in the Bay Area, you know, the word is getting out. So everybody knows what's going on. So the stocks are dipping and they're dropping on Tesla. But this is happening in particular where folks are protesting in front of the Tesla in Culver City in that dealership. So they're having a hard time with folks showing up every day. So other news is that, you know, they're the city's trying to recall Mayor Bass because of the Palisades fire. So there's other things going on, Dennis. The Alien Enemies Act, I know you guys are talking about that. One also note that if you're going to go to Mexico and you're crossing the border at Tijuana, they are checking your phone at the border. They're going through your phone and finding out any incriminating evidence that they may find on you. So, you know, be careful on what you have on your phone or when you're going or, you know, what's on there. So, yeah, so that's what's going on for right now in L.A. There's a lot going on as
hey,
well.
Gary, let me ask you, Dennis Bernstein here, and we are speaking with Gary Baca. He is going to be with us on Fridays doing Baca's Backyard. We're talking about Los Angeles, and we wanted to have a regular presence. So Gary, who's associated and identified with KPFK, our sister station in L.A., is an old friend of Miguel and of this program, and we wanted to make this connection. Gary, what is the sense of the community? The kind of, you know, it's just like, you've got Trump and Mr. Tesla walking through America like they own it and deciding when they want to get rid of 10,000 people, fire 20,000 people there. How does that kind of blatant disrespect and misunderstanding, but how is that reverberating in the community? You mentioned some of the stuff at Tesla, but talk more about that.
Well, you know,
I mean, he is just, I'm sorry to interrupt, he is using the White House as a showroom for Teslas. He did another little Tesla advertising. It's hard to tell if he's president of Tesla or president of the United States.
Well, you know, I just wondering why he's the vice president, or he thinks he's the vice president. One person told me, actually, I think it was Amy Goodman, that said he's the ex-president, being that he has the ex. So he's making these decisions. But I think the folks that are really upset here are the L.A. school district employees, that he's going after the education and
yes.
Some of the employees that are here. They're protesting that now. They're in front of the school districts, in front of City Hall. So I think this will be have a big impact on the education system here in Los Angeles. And when we talk about Chicano studies and we talk about civil rights studies and the history that's here in Los Angeles and the history throughout the country, they're trying to shut that down. So I think with what's going on with the dismantling of the oversight system and education and immigration, people are upset. And we talk about the dismantling of the Office of Ombudsman, appointed by the government for citizens to complain about businesses and financial institutions, universities, government departments. That's going away. So, you know, who's going to listen? You know, it's that old adage of, I'd complain, but who's going to hear me? Who's going to listen? So it's kind of like what people feel, but people are not feeling Elon Musk over here at all. So I think one thing is going to happen that I think people are just going to protest to where he's going to probably do this silently and not so blatantly. I think he just thought he was on top of the world and he's going to go out there and let everybody know that, you know, he's changing this country and he's going to turn it around and he's going to take out all the fraud. And it's really actually working against him, because the folks that thought, just immigration and that's it, I'm for that. And now their jobs are being threatened. So I think that's a thing that's happening out here, that folks are waking up and they're figuring out that, hey, you know, maybe this is not the right way to go. You know, the Alien Enemies Act, you know, they're talking about hundreds of Venezuelans deported from Los Angeles. We haven't seen this since World War II. We haven't seen deportation.
Gary? Have we lost him?
No. Can you hear me?
Now we got you back. Hello? I'm sorry. Go on.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, Los Angeles is definitely affected. But I just want to say, Dennis, that, you know, I was born and raised in Oakland. So I think it's about time that Northern and Central California and Southern California come together. It's important that we merge as a people, Chicanos, and know that we have the same struggles and challenges. So I just think it's an incredible thing that we are connecting to our sister station, KPFK, with KPFA, and working together in solidarity to talk about what's happening in California. And I think we can only become stronger as people, as radio hosts, as listeners, that we know what's going on. There's a lot of times when I was in Northern California and I didn't know what was going on in Southern California, and the same here. You know, I go back and forth. So there's times I'm here, I'm not up on what's happening in Northern California, but I think with this connection, we're able to fuse what's going on and bring it together and find out really the true story about what's going on with the government and in the streets.
Well, Gary Baca, this is a pleasure and an honor to work with you and to kick this off with this sharing of crucial information, because California is going to play a key role in the future of this country and what happens for better or worse. So unity is at the center of all of it. We thank you for taking the time out, Gary, and we will talk to you next week on Baca's Backyard Report. And you can alter the name. feel free. Thank you, Gary, for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Be careful.
Thank you, Dennis. Have a good day.
All right. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, there is finally a rebellion. There's an expanding resistance going on in Haiti. People are fed up. Kevin Pena is going to join us in 1 minute. Stay with us. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We welcome back to these airwaves our senior producer, Kevin Pina, who is an expert, has been reporting on Haiti for decades. Kevin, there have been protests around the country. There's something else that seems to be happening along with the U.S.-supported death squad mentality that's undermining the people's revolution.
Well, this past Wednesday, there was, for the first time, a protest of thousands of people in front of the Primater, which is the Prime Minister's offices up in Mousseau, which is just below Pétionville. And they were saying, Nous bouquet, nous pas capable encore. We're tired and we can't keep doing this. And they were brandishing machetes and sticks. The police did not take too kindly to it. They really just laid on a lot of tear gas. There was one member who was a leader of what are called the Brigade Resistance or the Resistance Brigades, who are these neighborhood watch committees that are now arming themselves in order to protect themselves from the gangs, from the terrorist Vivre Ensemble coalition, gang coalition in Haiti. One of those leaders, excuse me, from Canavivet, thought that he had seen, it turned out he's probably right, someone in the protests who was sent there by the gangs to spy and actually was seen like manipulating specific messaging within the group. And he confronted him and then he was shot and killed. So that was one fatality, but it wasn't the result of the police killing him. It was this suspected infiltrator from the gangs who was in the protest. It really has broken differently now. We know that the so-called Vivre Ensemble gangs have tried to hold these protests, small protests, to show their popularity, and usually it's just a couple hundred people, and it's usually the people who are sort of held captive in the neighborhoods that they control. It's, you know, if you've got a home there, it's sort of, you've got to get along to get along. And so, you know, they'll go to those marches of the gangs, but those marches were dwarfed by what we saw on Wednesday when thousands of people came from Canavivet and other neighborhoods to just basically say, if the police don't do it, we're going to do it ourselves. And this is a new phenomenon. This is now moving toward a much different kind of struggle. And of course, that's one of the biggest fears of the U.S. Embassy, of the so-called core group, which is further radicalization of the base, the mass of the poor, who have been the target of these gang massacres. It hasn't been rich people, although they talk this line of revolution. It hasn't really been the wealthy people that have been being killed. It's the poor folks in those neighborhoods that they control. Because they will not join or support the gangs slaughter them. And we saw that their numbers are quite significant during Wednesday's demonstration. Those who oppose the terrorist Vivre Ensemble coalition versus those who are forced to march for them, who are forced to live among them under their thumb, their heavy-handed thumb, and rule in some of the throughout many neighborhoods of Port-au-Prince.
Kevin, do you suppose that on the one hand, the extraordinary hatred that the current president of the United States has expressed toward the Haitian people and the general deportation policy, do you think this has put a fire, if you will, under the Haitian people, that it's time now or never?
Well, you know, there have been hundreds of people every day who are being sent back to Haiti from the U.S. The flights have stopped landing in the capital of Port-au-Prince, and now they've begun repatriating them through Cap-Haïtien, Haiti's second largest city in the north. Regular deportation flights have begun there. You know, it doesn't help when so much of the population is suffering from food insecurity. Again, the gangs doing these periodic massacres. You know, people sense that the police are just sort of tolerating the gangs while the gangs wipe them out. It's sort of the sentiment that people have, and therefore they're going to take You know, they're going to, and there's some good police who've actually been taking guns from the gangs and they've killed them and only turning in one or two and then giving the rest to these self-defense brigades. So there's some good cops in there who know what can really be done and seem to feel that the weight of the corruption within the PNH, the Police Nationale d'Haïti, the Haitian police, as well as specific sectors within the so-called CPT, the Conseil Presidential de Transition, that are allied with the gangs, that are secretly working with the gangs, keeping them on the field, giving them intelligence in order to allow them to continue this slaughter of the mass of the population. It's changing. The dynamic is changing right before our eyes, and it's really clear that the majority of people in Haiti do not support these people in vivo. Some, they see them as standing between them, returning to their homes. Remember, the vivo and some also has burned a lot of homes, right? That's its MO. As it comes in, it shoots anything that moves. It kills people, forces them out of the neighborhood, and then they start these fires to destroy homes so people can't return. You know, and then, of course, for the CPT to say that they're going to have elections under these conditions in 8 out of the 10 departments of Haiti, or 9 out of the 11 departments of Haiti, is kind of absurd to people. They're like, how can you, you know, we're not going to hold elections until you let us, things normalize. You take care of the gangs, or we'll take care of them, and we can return home and rebuild our communities. And there's even talk now among some of those groups that they may just boycott these upcoming elections, which, of course, will be a nightmare for the core group and the sort of foreigners who want to sponsor new elections in Haiti, which also include changing Haiti's constitution. That would be the worst-case scenario for them, which is that not only would the logistics of the elections really be impossible to be representative of the democratic will of the Haitian people, but then what happens if people in protest of those conditions withhold their votes and withhold their participation?
Well, these are important questions and things that we need to anticipate, and we always count on the help that you can give us, Kevin, in this regard. The information is crucial, and we just got 30 seconds, but where do you see this going next? If you had your hopes come true, what would you like to see happen? 30 seconds.
Well, it's really not up to me to, you know, I think.
But well, how would you like to see this play out very quickly?
Well, I would just express what people are saying, which is they want to return to their homes. They want some normalcy. They want a stable situation before Haiti rushes into a democratic process to be ensured that it actually represents their democratic will and their choice. There's a lot of big, more question marks than there are, you know, answers at this point. So, you know, it's just sort of sit and wait, and really we're seeing, again, the dynamics on the ground change right before our eyes as people now are not counting on the police, not counting on the international community to defend them anymore, but now they are picking up guns, they're picking up arms, they're exercising their right to arm themselves and arm self-defense in their communities. And that's a new dynamic that we hadn't seen before on the ground there.
You're hearing it here first on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Kevin Pina, thank you. Our senior producer here at the show. You are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a 2-minute break and we'll be back. We'll be right back. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, KPFA here in the Bay Area. And we welcome back to these airwaves our good friend Harvey Wasserman. Harvey is Solartopia all the way, knows more about solar energy than most anybody who I know, and about how good things to do to save the planet, which excludes blowing it up with nuclear weapons. Harv, it looks like that reactor there on the coast, Diablo Canyon, is a bomb waiting to explode.
It is, and Gavin Newsom should be ashamed. We, you know, they're complaining, he's complaining that California has the highest electric rates in the continental United States, and it's because of Diablo Canyon. There was a deal made in 2018 to phase it out. Diablo 1, Unit 1, should have been shut in 24, and Unit 2 shut this year, and Diablo has instead been kept alive by Gavin Newsom, who is simultaneously destroying the solar energy industry in California. So it's a terrible, terrible combination. Keeping Diablo Canyon open through 2030 will cost the ratepayers more than $11 billion in overmarket charges. It all goes into the pockets of PG&E, and it's a terrible situation. Gavin Newsom really should be, you know, impeached or whatever for doing this, and he has no excuse. You know, at the same time, he's made a big deal of saying there won't be any gas cars sold in California in 2035. That's true anyway. The market is completely pricing out gasoline-powered cars, and, you know, it's a frivolous, meaningless motion when we have this horrible nuclear, uninsured, by the way, Dennis, nuclear plant at San Luis Obispo that needs to shut.
Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, we're talking about, well, the future of the environment. And give us some compare and contrast nuclear versus solar. Well, what do people have to gain?
Solar is way cheaper. And, you know, you're not going to destroy half the planet when a solar plant, you know, will not blow up. So, sorry, then. So, I don't know what's going on here.
Are we losing you? Should we take
anyway? There we go. So, no, it's my fault. So the bottom line is that solar power is cleaner, cheaper, safer, more reliable, and creates more jobs than nuclear. California was at the center of the solar revolution. We had 70,000 people working in the rooftop solar industry. We have days, many days now, Dennis, where California gets its entire energy supply through the late afternoon from solar and from wind and geothermal. And, you know, we have many, many, many people with good paying jobs in the solar industry. It's not nothing pie in the sky about it. It's the number one new energy investment all over the world now. And, you know, throughout the world, nuclear is going away. Solar is booming ahead, along with wind and batteries. And Gavin Newsom has really harmed California's economic status, as well as our environment, by waging war on solar energy and by keeping Diablo Canyon open.
No, I'm confused, because we know that Trump hates solar. He accuses windmills of attacking birds.
Right.
So what's the, are they both sort of equivalents in this one?
I have no idea, but actually Gavin Newsom, I have no idea where he's coming from, except that maybe he's getting money from the nuclear power industry. But he's done more damage to renewables than Donald Trump has. This deal to shut Diablo, which Jerry Brown pioneered when he was governor in 2018, was a landmark deal. It was very, very well constructed, protected the workers, protected the environment, protected our rate structure, and Newsom coming in 22 and sabotaging, and he signed it as lieutenant governor, has done a horrible amount of harm. I do want to introduce one thing, and Dennis, you're probably the first one to get this on the radio. We have had a very serious accident at Moss Landing where there's a lithium battery facility. And what we've learned, and we need to carry this forward, is that we cannot go with lithium in batteries. Lithium is very expensive, very environmentally destructive to mine. There are labor issues, and it's a real major pollutant.
We have actually, Harv, just to get into this a little bit more with you, we've been watching the aftermath of that, perhaps the largest lithium fire, not the first by far, but apparently the most damaging. And the reason we're not hearing a lot more about it is because it's being covered up and denied.
It's terrible.
But the suffering is immense, isn't it?
Terrible. We can't go forward with a renewable revolution. We need batteries. But there are now, iron air batteries. There are sodium batteries. The big car company in China, BYD, is now marketing an electric car that does not have lithium. And that's the way we need to go. You know, I don't care what you think about Elon Musk. Well, I do care, but we cannot be burning Tesla cars, because the batteries with the lithium are extremely toxic. And, you know, in L.A., in the big fires here, a lot of electric cars, Tesla has burned, and the pollution from burning lithium is terrible. So we have, you know, we don't have a very, very clear path here. We have to get lithium out of the mix as we go into renewables.
And to be clear, there's no people don't understand it medically. That's part of what's going on. People are being sent home saying, oh, it's nothing, it's a this, it's a that. But it's changing people's lives for the worse.
Yes, terrible. Having studied the impacts of radiation from nuclear power plants and nuclear weapons for more than 50 years, I see the symptoms here. Lithium must not become the new plutonium. You know, it's very clear we have to go to a solartopian economy, but we have to be smart about it. And lithium does not have a place in batteries or in other or in electric cars going forward. We have alternatives. Sodium is also an order of magnitude cheaper. Gallium nitrate and iron air, and there are other batteries that will be better than lithium. So, you know, we can't just blindly say, oh, it's solar, therefore it's good. We have to be careful, and we cannot allow lithium. I'm glad that you've been covering this, because what's happened in Moss Landing is horrifying, and it's not supportable.
We do a regular segment on housing and houselessness, homelessness, with Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, and he's out there. This is his area. He has been documenting many people getting sick. He's been denied. He says, he's claiming that he's denied proper health care and that they don't even know how to deal with it.
No, they don't. It's very bad. And I'm lucky. I guess I should thank Gavin Newsom, because he bankrupted his policy led to the bankruptcy of a company that I signed a contract with to put solar on my house. And they were going to put in a lithium battery. I'm not going to do that now. There's no place for lithium going forward, just like there's no place for plutonium going forward. So we have to be smart. We have to be careful. There are some issues with inverters on solar panels that we need to deal with. I mean, we want to go solar. Batteries are very, very key. But we have to be careful we don't make the mistakes that the nuclear power industry made. You know, the federal government has never done a comprehensive study of the health impacts of nuclear power reactors in this country, of which right now there are 92 or 93, and two at Diablo Canyon. And we know from, you know, our half century with this technology that it's a failure economically and ecologically and in terms of human health. We do not want to repeat that mistake going forward with the solar and battery technologies. We can't do that. We can't afford it.
And it is interesting. The extractors have been on to the lithium thing for a while. And of course, the extractions are happening, among other places, in indigenous communities. Does this sound like uranium?
Yes, it's deja vu all over again. And, you know, they're saying, you know, this is back to the days of too cheap to meter. They said nuclear power will be too cheap to meter. We actually have now in this country solar and wind that are literally too cheap to meter. The economics are very clear. We just have to make sure that we that this technology is really clean. And lithium is the first major issue to come in, along with bird kills at windmills. And we have to deal with bird kills at windmills. That doesn't mean we don't build windmills. We have to make them safe. And we got to be smart about it.
Harv, I want to ask you a question. I'm changing the subject here. I'm changing the object, if you will. The Chernobyl situation, from it just a straight down, you know, not the politics at the moment, how dangerous is it if either one side or the other hits it the wrong way?
Oh, it's apocalyptic.
Chernobyl.
And I gotta remind your Chernobyl and Zaporizhia and Kursk. There are three sites in Ukraine, and well, Kursk is in Russia, that have been compromised by the military situation there. I mean, the Russians have already hit Chernobyl with a drone. Thankfully, they hit the sarcophagus, which is the big roof over Chernobyl. But if they ever hit the core of Chernobyl, which is still seething since 1986, we could have another gargantuan radiation release. That radiation did come to California, by the way. We could have, you know, we had four explosions at Fukushima. It would only take one operator with one drone to turn any nuclear plant, including Diablo Canyon, into an apocalyptic disaster. And that's why biggest reason, really, why we're keeping Diablo Canyon open when it's such an economic disaster is absolutely unforgivable. But, you know, you've got Putin, who has threatened the nuclear power reactors in Ukraine. And his own, the two in Kursk, when the Ukrainians came in and took that region, those reactors were very much a danger. I do want to remind your listeners, by the way, that Ukraine in 1994 signed an agreement with the United States and the former Soviet Union, Russia, to give up all their nuclear weapons, which they did do. They had 1,700 nuclear weapons that Ukraine had inherited from the Soviet Union. They gave them up, thank God, but in exchange for a promise that what's happening in Ukraine would not happen, and they thought their sovereignty and their security was guaranteed by giving up those weapons. Nobody talks about it. It's called the Budapest Memorandum, and it was endorsed by the Chinese, the French, and the Brits. And they've been sold out, having given up their nuclear weapons. There are a lot of people in Ukraine who wish they hadn't given up their nuclear weapons, but they do, as you mentioned, have nuclear power plants. There are six at Zaporizhia. There were four at Chernobyl. They're shut, thankfully, but we do have the one that blew up, and then there are two at Kursk. There are other reactors in Ukraine, and God help us, there are not more than 90 here. It would take an enemy or even a terrorist group or even a single psychopath, a single drone, to take out one of our reactors. We cannot have this, Dennis. This is just insupportable and unconscionable.
Amazing. Solartopia, how do people follow Solartopia and get more information about the things we're talking about?
Solartopia.org. You can write me directly. I'm happy to hear from you. Solartopia@gmail.com. And, of course, as you know, Dennis, you're an honored guest at our Monday Zoom calls, 2 p.m. Pacific time. On Monday, by the way, we're having Steve Donziger, the lawyer at Greenpeace, who's been going to talk about the Greenpeace decision. Anybody want to come join us, email me, solartopia@gmail.com, and I'll bring you into the Zoom call. But Steve Donziger is a great, great guy, and he's going to give us a full rundown with some others from Greenpeace on what happened at that horrendous decision, the verdict that we hope will get reversed. And, I've been a Greenpeace senior advisor and a voting member for a long, long time. It's a great organization. We need to protect it. And come hear how on Monday. Dennis, I hope you'll join us.
All right. Well, I know you've been doing that since before I was born, so I got something to learn.
Since before you were reborn, anyway.
Yeah. All right. You take it easy, Harv. Thanks for the good information.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you. And good night, everybody. No nukes.
No nukes. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacific Radio. Did I just take a position? I'm not going to say nukes, am I? Anyway, this is your daily investigative news magazine. We're coming to you every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. That's free speech radio, KPFA, here in the Bay Area. Write me a note, dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
As part of the All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign, Comics Take co-host comedian Kimberly Nickel is producing a stand-up comedy show celebrating Women's History Month with a full cast of not-dude comedians, sharing their best PG-13 rated